Everyone knows that music and art don't get the attention STEM subjects get in schools, even though there's lots of evidence pointing to the value of studying these things. And some people, by people I mean scientists, they dismiss music, saying it's not an important ability or sense because it doesn't have an impact on survival. In most scientific circles, music is considered a byproduct of language, and I get that. But I don't think music is just a subset of language. Music has connections in the brain that language doesn't have, so therefore, it's not a subject that can be overlooked. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we're talking about music's place in science. Steven Pinker is a cognitive scientist who wrote some notable works on linguistics and their place in evolution. In his paper, The Language Instinct, he labels music as useless because it doesn't give us grandchildren or accurate perception or help us anticipate the world. Okay, but just to make the obvious argument about evolution, the same way a peacock struts his feathers, men have been serenading women for forever in an attempt to woo them and having success to varying degrees. The better the singer or musician you are, the better chance you have of propagating. Isn't that the definition of natural selection? Take as an example Jimi Hendrix. He's had countless lovers because he was a famous musician, and as a result, several children. So his musical talents equate with other things on a list that make a mate attractive. And he passed on his musical genes, if there are such things as musical genes. Okay, moving on. So why are scientists downplaying music as both a serious subject and a worthy qualification for human evolution? I guess you have to start with survival, and evolution happens when you survive long enough to have children. You must have inherited genes that gave you those qualities. Scientists have developed a hierarchy of important genes for survival. So in order of importance to survival, things that are categorized as having an evolutionary purpose are first. Things that are categorized as adaptations, like language, are secondary. And where does music fall in this stratus? Well, music is deemed as an adaptation of language, or an adaptation of an adaptation, if you will. One scientist, a cosmologist, John Barrow, he said music had no role in the survival of the species. And psychologist Dan Sperber, he says music is an evolutionary parasite. Well, this all sounds too clinical. So let's look at art and music for what its value is. Start from there. There's a great word that we get from architecture. It's spandrel. And there's a paleontologist named Stephen Jay Gould, and he brought it into biology as a sort of cross-pollination of ideas. So in architecture, a spandrel is a space that doesn't hold up a structure, but becomes a spot where artists put some of their best paintings. In a building where there's empty or negative spaces, like the wall space between arches in a church. A spandrel, in architecture or in biology, is a fortunate byproduct. In his book, This Is Your Brain on Music, Dan Levitin seizes upon the term, calling music a spandrel, a fortunate byproduct of language. And music, being a byproduct of language, is certainly fortunate. Because we evolved to process sounds, patterns, pitch, and many other things very early on in our pre-linguistic stage as human beings. I think we're all in agreement that music is more than a third-class subject or mechanism. If it is a byproduct, it's one of the ones we care about and embrace. So let's see if there's anything in science that supports this. So we have five senses, and they've become fine-tuned to help us sense danger and to detect change in our world. Our vision has a million colors, and we can see movement in the dark with as little as one photon in a million. And our skin detects subtle changes in temperature or if something touches us. Our smell and our taste tell us if something is safe to eat. And our ears, our auditory, are arguably the most important of all of our senses for startle response. It's the fastest, and it has more redundant pathways in the brain than any of our other senses. The fact that our bodies have developed our hearing so deeply confirms it's the most important sense of all for survival. It has redundancies because if your hearing is damaged, it still has enough messengers or neural pathways to react to sounds. There are scientific articles about people that lose their vision and develop a new ability to see through these auditory pathways, meaning people who lose their vision can develop their auditory sense to give them the ability to identify objects as though they can see them. But it's not the other way around. People that lose their hearing completely can't really see a symphony play and hear the music, unless you're a musician and unless you're Beethoven. But even Beethoven, who composed while he was deaf, some of the greatest music that was ever composed, he couldn't conduct the orchestra. He got out of sync. They say he conducted too fast. So back to reflexes and the auditory startle response. The cerebellum, which is often called the reptile brain because it's the oldest part of the brain in evolution, is directly connected to the ears, the hearing. When we're asleep, our eyes aren't working, but our ears are. And we react to subtle changes and adapt to sounds that aren't signaling danger. There's a storm outside, and your ears are monitoring the branches tapping on the roof. Either they wake you up saying, go check it out, or they let you sleep saying, no trouble just yet. The cerebellum is a timekeeper. It tracks the branches constantly tapping, and yes, it's a main component of music making. And there are a few interesting aspects to the timekeeping being attached to emotion. And the cerebellum doesn't initiate movement, but it plays a big part in motor control. And it's a big component in emotion, attention, language, and as mentioned, it's the timekeeper. It tracks the beat and helps all species keep a gait or a constant motion like flapping wings or fins or legs. Now we have auditory, pleasure and reward mechanisms, timekeepers, startle reflexes, they're all housed in the same region. And music has grown out of all of them. This is why music has an emotional component. Just play a piece of music with a strong beat, and some of these senses might be triggered. But I have to add, there have been studies done about the pleasure mechanisms. They only get triggered when a person hears a piece they like. People don't feel pleasure just because there's a regular beat. That wouldn't work. A Pavlovian response to music only happens when the individual prefers a piece of music, and also when it becomes more familiar. So I mentioned Jimi Hendrix passing down his musical genes. Is there such a thing, and is it as simple as genetics, or is it taught from one generation to the next? Well, yes, no, maybe the answer lies in the cracks. So we go back to our cerebellum, and it's tracking the tapping branches on the roof. The cerebellum is telling us if something is a threat or not. If your cerebellum is damaged, your ability to respond effectively is lost. So you can't monitor your safety anymore while asleep. This is called habituation, and the timekeeper aspect of the cerebellum is key in habituation. If a person were born with a mistake in their gene count, we have about 25,000 genes. If 20 or so are missing, they will have some sort of disorder. And Down syndrome is the most prevalent. There's another one called Williams syndrome. In the case of people with Williams syndrome, they have a difficult time learning how to count and how to tell time or read, but they can still make music and they have intact language skills. People with Williams syndrome can have some really conflicting qualities. There's a Williams syndrome boy. He had an IQ of 50. He also had poor hand-eye coordination, but he became a different person when he played the clarinet. He'd learned a few pieces, and he was able to execute the fingering with expertise. He couldn't name the notes, but he learned to play the instrument. And his other coordination ability, like tying his own shoes or getting dressed, these abilities were not so good. But he could play the clarinet really well. What does this tell us? There's something about music tying together so many neural patterns that overrides the missing chromosomes? Maybe. Turns out, people with Williams syndrome were missing genes on the 7th chromosome, true, but also their neocerebellum, which is encased in the cerebellum, was larger than normal. And when scientists look at the Williams syndrome patients and how their movement could be entrained with music, they concluded their cerebellums had sort of elevated to being a mind of its own. And they decided the cerebellum was actually involved in processing sounds. So maybe music is an important product of evolution. What do you think of them apples? So a 180-degree pivot here. Has anyone heard of the startup called Boomy, where people can generate AI music themselves and receive revenue by streaming their creations? It's been around for a couple of years. Well, this week, Spotify had to take down a bunch of the songs, about 10,000 of them or so. It turns out the AI-generated songs actually started generating AI listeners. Fake music creating fake listeners. Yeah, on Tuesday this week, Lupus Ropec published an article on Gizmodo titled "Spotify Purges Thousands of AI Songs to Stop Bots from Streaming Them." The article doesn't say how the bots are generating the clicks, or if it's a click farm, or if somebody just keeps pressing the button, but it seems to imply that the bots are doing the streaming themselves. And it kind of reminded me of these Williams syndrome patients with their enlarged cerebellums. It kind of took on a mind of its own. The bots are taking on a mind of their own. Or maybe another comparison. The bot music is missing all the chromosomes. Or maybe that's kind of mean. Anyways, I'll post the article in the show notes at accelerandocast.com and you can decide for yourself. And I'll also post the book by Dan Levitin, which is a really good read. I hope you have a great week. Keep supporting live music, not the bots, and I'll see you next time.